This is a Crowd podcast.
Chris Kamara, midfielder and television icon. 600 career appearances for Swindon, Brentford, Stoke, plus others. Managed Bradford and Stoke, loves to faff things up on Soccer Saturday. Scored a UK top 10 album with his record Here's to Christmas and, of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's Football Book Club.
Cammy's such a loud goofball. He's too loud in my ear. Also, he's had more death threats than a president.
And she stood there in a bra and knickers while they go live to Sasa Kercic in the studio. And he's like, why have you got this woman?
Oh, yeah. As soon as Series 3 comes up, he goes in with the big shampoo, the big conditioner.
Hello and welcome to the new series of Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Agatha Christie, more Malcolm Christie. I'm James Bug, and over the series we'll be reading classics such as Neil Redfern's There's Only One Neil Redfern, Mesut Ozil's Gunning for Greatness, and the complete literary works of Michael Owen. But today, we're reading Chris Kamara's 2011 classic, Mr. Unbelievable, and reading it with me, please welcome back Jack Bernhardt.
Hello!
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Balgian.
Hello.
How are we all doing? All good?
Yeah. Wonderful.
So what I'm really looking forward to this series is the great thing about all the books we've read so far is we learn all these new things about players we never knew before. Isn't that right, guys? Like David Seaman used to steal bird eggs. Kevin Phillips loves Emmerdale. Things like that, which we never knew. But today's an extra special episode because in an interview last year, Chris Kamara, or Cammy, said, I'm not a reader. I know they always say a person who reads a book lives a thousand lives, but someone like me lives only once. I haven't even bothered reading my own autobiography. So today, not only are we going to learn about the life of Chris Kamara, but also in a football book club first, Chris Kamara is going to learn about the life of Chris Kamara as well.
Would he write it with his eyes closed? What's going on? How does it work?
A lot of questions raised, and hopefully we're going to be able to solve some of them as we go through. But Cammy, get excited. Over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and our mate Ken is back with another chant about a long-since-retired footballer. Everyone excited for Ken coming back?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
I'm hoping for, like, a sea shanty or something to keep it topical.
Oh, yeah. Topical. I'll put in a request. I've got Ken's ear. I can do that.
I can imagine Ken, he's coming up with all these amazing things. Like, could you make one that's a sea shanty as well?
Yeah. Sure.
Could you do a sea shanty about Dominic Matteo? But first, guys, how does it feel to be back, everyone? How are you all doing? What have you been doing to bide the time, James?
Well, I've been doing, I've been a bit ill this week, but I washed my hair with and used aloe vera as a conditioner. And let me tell you, it's changed my world.
I've also bought a new shampoo and new conditioner.
All right.
For 30 quid. Because
£30.
I'm just being very frugal.
Oh, because yeah. As soon as Series 3 comes up, he goes in with the big shampoo, big conditioner.
My big change since the last series is I changed bank account and my bank sent me a box of wine.
A box of wine.
We are getting so old, aren't we? We are getting, all of us sound so old right now. Let's see what Amazon's saying about the book. Let's get back to the book. The book has 4.6 stars from, get this, 571 reviews.
What?
I know. I think Marcus Hanneman had like zero reviews. This has got 571.
And what's bloody amazing, hell. None of those are Cammy.
Yeah, well, he hasn't even read his own reviews.
Yeah.
Hasn't even got time for that. Including, here we go, here's some of the reviews. Here's a 5-star review from Mr. Reed called Funny Dedicated Man. And Mr. Reed's, yeah, that's quite accurate. The review says, I have always liked Mr. Unbelievable, both in his football career and lastly in his TV career. His bloops are always funny. It says bloops, it doesn't say bloopers. Please do not change. It is nice to watch a natural at work. And then for balance...
Please do not change your bloop, Mr. Kamara.
And then for balance, Debbie rated it 1-star with a review. It's a present, so I've got no answer. Just lumps in a 1-star review. So, guys, are you a Mr. Reed or are you a Debs? What do you think of the book, basically, is what I'm asking.
I'm a Mr. Reed with regards to like him as a person. I think I agree with all that. He's a big...
Okay.
got a lot of charisma. He's a big character, isn't he? Everyone tends to like Cammy. But
you love his bloops.
I love his bloops.
I love his bloops.
The book I liked.
Yep. Okay. Well, say no more.
Oh, it seems very Josh, guarded.
Yeah. James, this is a podcast about a book. You're going to have to like go
the book I like.
Give
okay,
nothing away.
Goodbye.
Tash, what did you think of the podcast?
I thought we're starting this series on a high. I quite enjoyed this book.
I very much felt the same way because it's, you know, there's a lot of dad joke humor in the whole thing, but you kind of get carried away with it. And after a while, I was cracking up. It was much.
Yeah, I was going along with it. I was like reading sentences out to my boyfriend, like, oh, isn't Cammy funny? And he was like, have you lost the plot, mate? Oh, you've been inside too
long.
That's
when you know
Jesus
lockdown's
Christ.
Gone on for too long.
Yeah.
Wow, this cat is really funny.
But just for context, Tash's boyfriend is Phil Thompson. So he's heard all of this before on Soccer Saturday. Jack, what did you think of the book? You loved it?
I'd say I'm predominantly a Mr. Reed with showers of whoever that other person was.
Showers of Debs.
Showers of Debs. Couple of showers of Debs here and there.
That's like, good.
I'd say, yeah, there's a lot of very good stuff in here.
Let's get to the book. It's called Mr. Unbelievable after his catchphrase, Unbelievable Jeff, just in case. If he didn't know that was his catchphrase and then, like why is he called?
And then you picked it up.
Yeah, very strange. But oh boy, does he milk that. There's actually a really great note I've got on page 39, really early on, where he talks about the kind of the genesis of Unbelievable Jeff. And he names some of the great catchphrases with it. He goes, Bruce Forsyth used to open the Generation game with the words, nice to see you, nice. And Dale Winton was forever saying, bring on the wall during Saturday night favourite Hole in the Wall. The two great catchphrases, Hole in the Wall and Bruce Forsyth.
How long did Hole in the Wall run for? I thought
about like two series.
That's so odd.
Was Cammy on? Was Cammy on Hole in the Wall?
He probably
was. He must have been.
Surely.
I imagine that as soon as Hole in the Wall started, he was like, this is going to run and run. Let me tell you. Bring on the wall is going to be a thing that we say.
He was thinking, like, in 10 years' time, if someone records a podcast on my book, they're all going to be saying, oh, God, tragic. It's just, sadly, Dale Winter's dead since. Anyway, he is dead. It's a fact. He died when I was in Sri Lanka.
Where were you when Dale Winton died? Everyone remembers.
So, Cammy's catchphrase, Unbelievable Jeff, is up there with the best. Jack, I set you a special task. How many times does the word unbelievable pop up in the book? Because he says it a lot.
I can't believe you made me count every time.
I made him go through with his finger and count them one by one.
First of all, do you want to guess, surely?
Yeah, I'll have a guess.
So how many pages is this book? It's 318 pages. I'm going to say 350.
So you think there's more than one? There's
Because he uses it in like every chapter title.
He does use it a lot.
Okay. So this isn't including like the top of the bit where it says unbelievable.
Oh,
like
then 318.
Exactly one for one. James?
I am going to go 87.
I'm thinking more James. I'm going to go only 102.
Well, this is an anticlimax because it's 74.
Oh, that was pretty close.
Yeah,
it feels like a lot more, to be honest.
The thing is, 74 is still so many times to say the word unbelievable.
Yeah, it's an unusual word to use that often.
It's a ridiculous... I mean, in context, he says goal 3 times throughout the whole book.
Is that true?
No, of course it's not true.
Anyway, fittingly for a book that says unbelievable 74 times in it, it starts off a little bit all over the shop. There's so many things that we haven't had in books before. There's like a lineup at the beginning, which is like a cast list effectively for a book. And importantly, there's a foreword by a guy I know that Jack would like to talk about. Who is this man, Jack?
Jeff Stelling is the man. It's basically like that. I mean, they're like an iconic double act in everything that they do, Jeff and Cammy.
Name a more iconic duo than Cammy and Jeff.
Debs and Mr. Reed.
Debs and Mr. Reed. Surely they are the Cammy and Jeff Stelling of our time.
What is it about their relationship that fascinates you, Jack?
What I find fascinating about their relationship is that Cammy seems to see Jeff as this guru.
I'd say, like, a stats, like, genius. Everything he does, he seems to be, like, he can memorize everything he does. Like, every single stat, he'll memorize it. Because apparently what he'll do is go to a Winchester service station and sit down with papers and just memorize every single fact. He's like, he's a sponge, this guy. He can take everything that's going through his brain, right? It's incredible. And it's clear that Jeff is definitely getting a producer in his ear telling him all of these facts. Like on Sokasatsu, isn't it? Am I going crazy?
Well, I think it's a bit of both.
He was hosting Countdown for a while. He must be pretty smart, you know?
Yeah, you're saying someone got the letters through his ear on Countdown.
Well, I mean, the Countdown thing's really interesting as well, because he will, like, Cammy seems to be kind... No, I don't want to say... I think Cammy expected, when Jeff got Countdown, I think Cammy expected to be going along with him.
He thought he was going to be Rachel Riley.
Absolutely, I completely think he thought. As soon as Jeff got the job, he was like, "Brilliant, cool. I'll do the words." And Jeff was probably like, "Oh, I don't think they're going to let you do that." He's like, "It's fine. I'll do Dictionary Corner. It's fine. Don't worry about it."
There was something you flagged where you said that you were saying, like, how he both, like, adores him and also makes fun of him a lot of the time in the book. He's got a real love hate relationship with him, it seems.
He's got a strange love hate relationship. He calls him. So he sees him as his genius, but he also calls him the Smurf in chief, which I have no idea what that means. I've been thinking about it for a long time. I have no idea. He is a blue.
Is he pup? There's no one called this. Like, Papa Smurf is the closest to the Smurf in chief, right? The gerontocratic society.
Yeah, I don't think he's been democratically elected as Smurf in chief.
No, but he's the wisest and the oldest, so I guess he's.
And he also says that Jeff is the. Oh, it's so weird. He says that Jeff is a granny magnet, and that. That grannies are obsessed with him because he's on Countdown, but also because they think he looks like a garden gnome that they want to put in his windowsill. I've never.
Yeah, he's processing a lot of stuff here, isn't he?
It's so weird because he's both adoring him constantly. He's like, this guy is a genius. He's incredible. And he's also like, well, he's a big granny magnet smurf, isn't he? He's just a big granny magnet smurf. The whole thing is so weird.
I know what you mean, because the only thing he says about Phil Thompson is that he's got a big nose, but he goes into so much detail about what Jeff's telling him.
The thing with Phil Thompson is, you know, one or two references to his nose being big is fair game. It's fine.
Yeah.
There's, like, within the first 10 pages, he probably mentions it about 30 times. It's like, all right, we get it. Like, there's a lot of sort of quite passive-aggressive... descriptions of people past stuff as like Soccer Saturday banter. It's like, all right, like, some of this is just a bit mean now. Let's just rein this in a bit.
And also, it's really weird because he's like, Jeff Sterling looks like a Smurf. Phil Thompson's got a big nose. Matt Letizier wears Southampton socks. You're like, okay, well, we know who you like.
But there is something fascinating. There is something fascinating about how the Soccer Saturday things. He describes them like they're the Rat Pack or like they're... it's like Beatlemania when they go to Japan and stuff, and like for the World Cup in 2002, and everyone's following them around and going, Cammy.
There's absolutely no way that's what happened at all. There's just no way. Can you imagine Jeff Sterling and Chris Kamara running around the streets of Kyoto with fans running on? That can't be allowed to happen.
It's so over the top the whole way they do it. But it's incredible. Like, the first 100 pages of the book are entirely about Soccer Saturday. It's like, it really suckered me in, this book, because it's funny, the first 100 pages, but it's all like, you know, his catchphrases and these silly things. But it's just relentless Soccer Saturday. It really is. And you can see who it was aimed for, this book, at the beginning.
At one point, they just do a transcript of a Soccer Saturday, like a game. It's just like a thing that you can find on YouTube, which is Jeff. It's like Jeff Sterling saying, "Oh, and we go over to the Majewski Stadium, we go over to Fratton Park. What's happening, Chris Kamara?" And Chris Kamara just describes what he said.
I would say that is the laziest part of the book.
That's so lazy.
It is. But it is so funny, like the way like they're walking around, like, we could get away with anything those days. We were doing whatever we want. The women, what's the saying? Like, men wanted to be us, women wanted to be with us.
There's also a thing that Chris Kamara says that Jeff Sterling, oh God, I feel gross talking about this. Jeff Sterling introduces himself to members of the opposite sex by saying, "The name's Stelling, Jeff Stelling." And the thing is, I have to believe that's not true.
I 100% believe that's true.
No, Tash, I just 100%. Can't, on behalf of Jeff Stelling, on behalf of women everywhere, I can't believe it's true.
Those are just, that's just the way of the Smurfing Chief. Just the way. When you're Smurfing Chief, Jeff, you'll know. Oh, look, I love Jeff Singh. I think he is a great host of Soccer Saturday. However, I don't think he reads the room very well one bit. Right at the beginning of the book, in the foreword, he's listing all these unbelievable facts about Cammy. He goes like, unbelievable, Eric Cantona was a replacement. Unbelievable, he played at Wembley for a real football team. No kidding. Unbelievable. Cammy's had loads of death threats because he's one of the few black players in English football during the 70s. And he was a target for racist organisations such as the National Front. Banter.
It really...
Fundamentally, you have to say, that's unbelievable. Everything
it's just,
about that is
nice,
unbelievable.
It's the transition, though. It's the transition from... He's like, basically, it's like, Cammy's such a loud goofball. He's too loud in my ear. Also, he's had more death threats than a president. It's like, whoa. Like... What?
I would like to bring your attention to one of his incidents at Soccer AM, which I don't know if you paid much attention to, but he only dedicates a page to this, but I dedicated about 7 hours of my life to it because I went down a real wormhole.
This is the research we like to hear. More research than Cammy did.
Seriously is, because just you wait. He mentions that Sasha Kercic was getting loads of grief for saying that British women were ugly, and they decided to prove that the women in Barnsley were not actually ugly by getting a glamour model from Barnsley to meet Cammy in a dressing room at Upton Park. I can't for the life of me work out the kind of reason why they did it at Upton Park. I assume that's just where he was for the day.
Sure, but... why not? Yeah, sure. That's what life was like in the 90s.
We invite Sasa Kercic down to Upton Park.
Yeah, but Sasa Kercic was in the studio.
Okay.
And they are like trying to give him grief for this. Yeah. And Sasa Kercic has no idea what they're talking about.
Okay.
So... Now, bear in mind, in Chris Kamara's book, all he says is, Sasa Kercic said this thing. However, when I found the real clip, he said no such thing, and he was completely baffled on Soccer AM because he's like, what on earth are you talking about? And it was a totally different footballer called, who was it? Georgie Hristov, who actually said
Barnsley
it.
Barnsley winger.
Yeah, and they pull him up in front of however many millions of people used to watch Soccer AM, and are giving Sasa Kercic loads for calling British women ugly.
Oh my God.
Even though he never
said
it.
Like, he never said it, and he got like death threats for it and all sorts.
Oh my God.
And he never said it was this other guy, and he obviously just got Eastern European £1.5 million players mixed up.
Well, I was going to say, because Sasa Kercic never even played for Barnsley, so that is really...
Yeah, we've all done it. We've all confused them, Eastern European £1.5 million
We've all got
players.
Sasa Kercic and Georgie Hristov confused at one point in our life.
But they did this whole prank, and it wasn't even the guy.
It wasn't even him. And this poor woman, April, is some... girl from Barnsley who was a soccerette and then got asked to go and be part of this thing, and she stood there in a bra and knickers while they go live to Sasa Kercic in the studio, and he's like, why have you got this woman?
Well, and they're like saying, what do you think of her, Sasa? Not so bad, are they?
No, like, no. They're not so bad after all.
what are you talking, why are you bringing this to me?
The book, after all these kind of light-hearted stories, takes a genuine pivot after 100 pages, and it gets really enlightening on issues like racism. And he's really amazing when he talks about it. Like, doesn't use the book just to talk about these kind of things. He talks about loads of other things, but when he does talk about this, he goes into great depth about it. And there's some amazing bits, like a genuinely. I'm going to use the word unbelievable here, but there is a genuinely unbelievable bit where someone who wrote him a death threat in the 80s. Like, comes up to him in like 2002 or something and was like, I wrote that death threat. Sorry. I found that whole section really interesting, didn't you guys?
He put up with a lot.
When he talks about racism, really quite enlightened. Other things, slightly less enlightened on. One thing, Stan Bowles' gambling. Chris kind of bankrolls him a few times. Like, he gives him some money and then Stan will lose it on the horses or whatever. But then one time, Chris Kamara's kind of talking about the importance of money and stuff like that and not wasting it. He's like, well, when I go gambling, it's just a bit of fun and it doesn't matter too much. Stan Bowles convinces Chris Kamara so that he can't lend him any more money. Go spend all your money right now so you can't lend me any more money. And Chris Kamara kind of goes along with this, which doesn't make any sense because just spending your money is no better than gambling it away in a second. And what Chris Kamara goes is, I'd really like a rocking chair. So he just goes and buys a rocking chair and sits on a rocking chair watching Stan Bowles as he gambles. I don't see who that's teaching a lesson to.
I'm going to be honest. I read this and then I think I went to sleep and then I'm pretty sure I thought I dreamt it. Because that bit is
it's some
so
kind
bizarre.
Of like David Lynch-esque scene. Yeah. Where someone's in a rocking chair just watching someone gambling, just slowly rocking. Like, what are you talking about? I've always fancied owning a rocking chair. What are you talking about?
What
casino at this point?
What casino has like a rocking chair shop next to it?
Okay, are they gambling at 3 p.m, so the rocking chair place is open, or is this a 24-hour rocking chair shop? Like, in my head, this is like midnight.
Yeah, no, like three in the morning.
Casinos do everything they can to keep you in there, right? So they've got the no clocks, the no windows. They've got rocking everything you could want.
Antique store.
Yeah. Just any niche interest to keep you in there. I just want to talk to you guys about footballers' digs as a general thing, because it pops up quite a lot in a lot of the books that we read, footballers' digs. I'm guessing it's not so much a thing nowadays, but in a lot of the books that we've read, you know, in the past, in the sort of young footballers in the 70s, 80s and 90s, they stay with families who, I don't understand what the, like, what is the context? Like, do they get paid for it? Like, what happens?
They pay board, don't they? A few of them have mentioned paying board. So I'm guessing it's like fostering a 21-year-old.
A footballer. Yeah.
So is it like young footballers who obviously they've signed for someone and they're sort of 16, 17, they're too young to live alone, and people just sort of, they're there to support them, feed them? Because a lot of the stories we read is just young kids kicking off about the food not being very nice, like pasta and...
Well, you're talking about Darren Huckabee, basically.
Yeah.
Darren Huckabee had a choice, though, of living with her or... Darren Huckabee had a choice of living with those people or with Kevin Keegan, it seems like, in his book. go back and listen to that episode. That's the choice. That's the alternative.
But also, in this, Cammy's wife, or maybe it was his girlfriend at the time, had to sort of say, look, the food's terrible. Can you change the food?
Is this referring to Cammy when he was a player? This is when he was a player and he was looking after younger players, right?
Well, he was in digs at one point.
Yeah,
just,
but I think
it's just a general point on digs in general in football. I don't fully understand it.
Yeah, I don't quite. I don't quite get how they work, where you list and stuff. I guess the clubs probably have some kind of information on them. If anyone knows, get in touch with us and tell us. If you ever hosted a footballer,
they're always like lovely old ladies, aren't they?
Yeah, but Tash is right. It's like fostering footballers.
Yeah,
is it for like people who wanted their children to be footballers and they weren't, and then like
has anyone got any space in their house?
Yeah, I could do it,
Jack.
Sure, why not?
Will you take Jack? You live in North London. Would you take in a Barnet or a Spurs or... Well, you might not take in a Spurs player.
I'd take in a Barnet player. I wouldn't take in a Spurs player. Yeah. Even though
I can see that coming. Guys, I'm going to move us on to this week's Out of Context, Chris Kamara. So at this point in the show every week, we bring our favourite sentence from the book, Out of Context. But whatever you do, don't tell us what's going on around it. I've got mine here. Guys, if you don't mind me going first. My Out of Context, Chris Kamara is, modern coaches would have had me sucking on a slice of kiwi fruit and a bowl of nuts given the chance. But this was Swindon. that's my one. Anyone else got one? James?
Dion Dublin played a mean saxophone.
That might come in handy later in the quiz, by the way. Just remember, what James said. Remember what James said.
Okay, I've got one. I took an unusual business decision and opened an office so that at least for once I could get a six-pack. But a bunch.
That is a classic example of Chris Kamara's jokes. And also, it brings us to one of the weirdest bits of the book, when Chris Kamara just like buys an off-license. Yeah.
And just works there during the day.
Yeah. It's
again, I feel like this is another bit where I fell asleep later and was like, was that a dream? Did I dream that? Because that is so odd. Why would you buy an offie?
Chris Kamara behind the till on a rocking chair. What is going on here?
Yeah. Yep, Jack, what's your out of context?
So I know for sure that she had devoured the raw pizza to the last crumb.
I can't remember that.
And that was out of good, because you're never going to find out what it was. That's the rule of out of context Chris Kamara Club.
I'm going to have to read it again.
And there'll be plenty more Chris Kamara chat when we come back after these ads.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We'll do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks. Hello, I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't. I actually love interaction with people. I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Welcome back to Football Book Club. Tash, you've got a burning issue with Cammy, haven't you?
Yes. So this is a man who likes to include his name in absolutely everything that he possibly can.
Absolutely.
So I've christened these Cam-and-toes.
Camel-toes.
You like it?
You always have to bring vaginas up somehow. You do that every single episode. Every episode.
Let me enunciate better. Cam-and-toes.
Okay.
It's a portmanteau of portmanteau and Cammy. And
wow, you did a portmanteau with portmanteau in it. Oh my god.
Yeah.
But it's like Inception.
Camception. I just felt like the whole book is a little bit David Brent, isn't it? But like him including his names and things and then insisting that everyone else use it is just I loved it so much. So yes. He says that people still call it a Kamara cam on the call sheet, even when it's not him. And people ring him up and say, you're at the pitch today. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm at home or I'm in the offie or whatever.
I'm running the offie.
Kamioki, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he calls his kids the Kamets.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Like, I like that.
Do you?
I like the Kamets. Tash, did you notice that at the start of the book, he actually uses another little pun with his name, but to me, he gets it wrong. So he says his private plane would be called Air Cammy, which is just completely missing a trick there for me. It would be called Camara, surely, or Camare. Like it wouldn't be called Air Cammy. Jack, do you want to step in here and say this?
No, you guys clearly have it.
Yeah,
whatever it is you're doing.
Camara, that's the one, right? Camara.
But talking to Kamioki. Guys, who wants this week's dramatic reading?
More than anything else in the world.
So basically, as listeners of the show will know, every week we take a segment of the book and we put it to dramatic music. So can somebody cue the dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Yes.
Ooh. Cue Kamatic music.
Yes, Jack. Tash, where were you there? Where were you there, Tash? You missed that. Okay, this story is called... Let it go, James. Let it go. Just get back to your rocking chair. This story is called Chris Kamara Gets Sacked Because of Jazz. At the end of my first full season at Valley Parade, a party at the Kamara household was arranged to celebrate staying in the First Division. It was typically chaotic. It was supposed to have been a way to let off steam, to let the hair down after a tough year. It had been a traumatic first season in the First Division. Everyone had worked so hard to keep us in it, so it made sense to invite the players, Jeffrey and his wife, and most of the club staff. Jeffrey is the chairman of Bradford.
The chairman,
time,
yeah, Jeffrey Richmond.
Jeffrey Richmond, that's it, yeah. Mm-hmm. We invite, and they've already got a bit of a troubled relationship already up at this point.
Yeah.
Ooh, getting excited. We invited 60 to 70 guests round. We had caterers, booze coming out of every room in the house, and... And just, that's excessive. Every room in the house.
Unhygienic as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sloshing about.
After a few, brackets, dozen, beers. Very fun. I even took the... alcoholism. After a few dozen beers, I even took the microphone for a sing-along with the band. Wrong decision. This time, I didn't run through my usual routine, which, if you're wondering what his usual routine is, Brown-Eyed Girl, your song, Born to be Wild. Instead, I decided to make up my own words as I sang along to a jazz number, and my off-the-cuff lyrics took the mickey out of his chairman. I remember the words to the tune of George Gershwin's Summertime. It meant something like this. I won't sing it, but I've got
it. Nope, you got to sing it. Dramatic singing.
We'll wait for Ken's song for the singing, don't worry. I almost did sing it. It went something like this. Summertime, working for Jeffrey ain't easy. That kind of works up to that point.
Summertime.
Don't try and trick me into singing.
Okay. Ah, you did.
So that bit kind of fits. But then he goes, then the next line he sang was, he wants to pick the team and sign the players as well. But until that morning when he comes and sacks me, all I can say is, Jeffrey, please don't pry. I don't get how that fits in at all. A lot of words.
Right, it's jazz. It doesn't make sense. It's jazz.
George Gershwin is spinning in his grave.
I warbled on like a prize idiot, believing that this was a big laugh. I was so engrossed that I failed to notice my guests flinching uncomfortably, which is a common theme throughout the book. Or Anne glaring at me from behind the shrubs. Why is she hiding behind a hedge?
She's like, oh God, Cammy's getting on the mic. Oh God, I got to get into the shrub again.
Least of all was I aware of Jeffrey with a grin and fix in his face, appearing to the assembled guests to be the perfect good sport. Looking back, it wasn't the shrewdest move. I was struggling to get the words out through my own laughter, and I presumed that he was laughing as well. He may well have been at the time, but apparently inside he was hurting. I don't get what he's done that bad. Surely what he said cannot be that offensive.
I think Jeffrey Richmond seems like a bit of a prize, a bit sensitive.
Yes,
and the idea also of, oh God, there's just the mental image of Cammy laughing really hard while singing and everyone else being completely silent. Just, oh, it just makes my skin crawl.
I agree.
Where did I read, though, that Cammy's version of Brown Eyed Girl was better than Van Morrison's?
In this book.
I've read that recently.
In the book.
It's in the book.
He says it himself. He literally says that. He stands by it.
To be honest, I've lost this story. Much like his improving George Gershwin lyrics. I'm struggling to keep up with this. My friend Alan Ross said the Bradford chairman had a smile on his face when I first started. As the words echoed round the room and the rest of our guests stood around laughing, the smile became increasingly strained. He was squirming by the end of it. Rossi, who couldn't take his eyes off the chair, and was squirming with him, as no doubt were many of the guests that night. The 1997-98 season hadn't even started, but I was well and truly done for.
Oh, great.
That was the dramatic reading. Yeah. Sorry, the chromatic reading. Talking of songs, who wants to hear Ken's song this week?
Yes.
More than anything else in the world.
You can't say that for every segment, Jack.
Yeah, you're right. You need
Has he rewritten Brown Eyed Girl?
No, sadly. How quick do you guys think Ken works? He can just work on the back of you saying, oh, funnily enough.
Wait, Ken, we want a sea shanty that sounds like Brown Eyed Girl.
Michael Brown Eyed Girl?
Yeah, it works.
Anyway, Ken, he's written some great songs in the past. Basically, what he does is he goes and finds old footballers and gets their names to fit into chants about different songs. What's he done? I love it when you call me Libra Alita to the tune of Senorita. He did Stern John to the tune of Thong Song. He's done a lot of stuff. Some good, some less good. But this week he's got a song to the tune of a Ricky Martin classic. And it's not She Bangs.
Oh.
So you can probably guess which one it is. It's the other one. Who's ready? I'm not going to sing it again, but here we go.
What?
Turns you inside out. Just give it to Rio Coca. His goals will bring you down. Give it to Rio Coca. His tricks will leave you dead and his pace will run you over. He will wear you out. Just give it to Rio Coca. Come on.
Come on.
Give it to Rio Coca.
Come on.
Give it to Rio Coca. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's back.
He's definitely back. That was
That's
the best one.
That's a strong return.
That is great.
So strong.
I'll give you a little bit of context on that. Ken also sent me two lines to work into the song, which I had to cut because they were, he'll make you take your kit off and go training in the rain.
Oh, but that's so good.
But Ken is back. More of those, please. It's time for Peter Reed Watch.
Peter Reed Watch.
Yes!
My favourite thing.
Jack, does Peter Reed pop up in Chris Kamara's autobiography?
Peter Reed does pop up in Chris Kamara's autobiography. Not once, not twice, but five times.
What?
Five times!
Like twice.
I thought it was like twice.
Is it five times! We see him first. He is laughing at Chris Kamara on Soccer AM. When the Stoke players are firing balls at Chris Kamara's butt. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Vaguely.
Okay, that happened. He was starting out as an assistant manager for Tony Pulis at Stoke, apparently. And it was his first day. And he was like, wow, this happens every day. You get your ass handed to you. Then, time number two, Peter Reed was on Goals on Sunday, a program which I think Chris Kamara thinks I care a lot about, much more than I actually do. Because he spends a long time talking about Soccer Saturday. He apparently once had to tell Peter Reed off for using the word bollocking.
Wow. Did you have a director's cut of this book? Because I remember any of these stories.
So number three, he scored against a Bolton team that featured several handy players, including Sam Allardyce and Peter Reid, the future England international. Time number four, he's talking about when Chris Waddle, who played for him at Bradford, moved to Sunderland. He was snapped up by Sunderland boss Peter Reid for a fee of £100,000. And finally, time number five, he is advised by Peter Reid to keep on one of the assistant coaches at Stoke, which is something he didn't do, and he later come to regret.
There we go. That was the most complete Peter Reid watch yet.
We have reached Peter Reid saturation.
Well, not only is the book revolutionary in that way, I found the book was the most high-tech book we've had yet. Did anyone else notice this? It's the most high-tech book we had yet. Page 185. He talked about a horror tackle with Frank McAvenny. The incident has become something of a myth as the years have gone by. And if you don't believe me, there's a clip of the incident on the YouTube website. And then brackets, www.youtube.com. The YouTube website.
The YouTube website.
And you can make your own mind up on this. And I assumed that's where it would end. And then he went, just type in Kamara_McAvenny.avi and you'll see what I'm talking about.
That is one of the greatest books of any book we've read, genuinely. I laughed
agree.
So hard at that.
I took a picture of that and sent it to about 8 people immediately.
It's revolutionary. We've never had a website in a book yet.
Do you know what's really sad, though? Do you know what's really sad? I did it and it doesn't work.
No! Mine works.
But if you just... But if you just type in Kamara,
I couldn't get it to
it
work
without that. Yeah.
Yeah. So then it works.
He's literally typing in the name of the file, which he probably uploaded, and that's why.
The one I found had like one comment on it, and it was just some bloke winding up his mate saying like, "My mate shags popcorn." That's the only thing that it said on my one. So I've learned nothing about the tackle, but I do think the book should be put in the Hall of Fame for that, because that is revolutionary. We haven't had a link in a book yet.
That is so true. Good.
That's true.
Jack, there was something, a common theme in the book that you wanted to talk about, I know, regarding people who come onto the pitch at a certain point.
Yes. He has a real thing about mascots. He is so odd about this because he's talking, this comes up when he is, he's talking about his terrible time that he had with Geoffrey Richmond at Bradford. When he becomes manager and, you know, Geoffrey starts picking the team and it's terrible. And he starts off this chapter by saying, there are two people you should never work with. They are chairman and mascots. And like he will, for the rest of the chapter, go on about how, you know, how bad it is to work with a terrible chairman. But he does like a quick little summary of how terrible mascots are. He says, club mascots, Gunnosaurus, Chirpy the Cockerel, all of them have always been a royal pain in the bum to live broadcasters. They just don't see it, do they? It's okay walking around like that to be cheered at on your own ground by your own fans, but do they really think anyone at home finds the weird cross-dressers the slightest bit funny when they get in the way of us lot trying to do our jobs?
Does he call them cross-dressers?
He says they're weird cross-dressers. Yeah. Where has this come from? Like,
does Chris Kamara know what a mascot is? For a guy who pokes fun at himself so much throughout the book, he does like have no sense of humor with mascots at all. It's very unusual.
He really doesn't. And also, from my point of view as an Arsenal fan, Gunnosaurus was the best bit of going to an Arsenal match. Like,
that says a lot about Arsenal.
He hates mascots. And like, essentially, they are big things that, from what he says, is they're sort of big idiots who get in the way, and that's literally his job. Like, that's literally what he does.
Yes.
Like, he just goes around, going in dressing rooms, getting in the way, getting in people's views, just being annoying. Maybe they're just cramping in style. Like, that is his thing, isn't it? Literally.
So in the book, he kind of goes into varying depth about his playing career, then his managerial career, and it was all pretty interesting towards the end. This is also after there's some mad bit at the end where he's like offered the job as press secretary at Harrods, and I couldn't understand what was going on with the book at that point.
And his wife is like, you're kidding, and then Cammy gets really upset,
and then a mascot ends up getting the job. He's like, fuck's sake.
Gunnosaurus answering questions on Harrods.
It is a ridiculous idea, though. Chris Kamara as press secretary for Harrods. It's like, I'm with his wife. Like, it doesn't make any sense, and I'm sure that can't have been the offer. But I thought towards the end of the book, after that, I think it has my favorite thing in the whole book on the last two pages. Chris Kamara thinks that Michel Platini reads nuts. Nuts magazine.
He says, I don't remember this.
He bumps into Michel Platini somewhere, and he realizes that Michel Platini isn't very nice to him. I got a real shock, and Platini said he knew who I was, but his tone suggested my outburst on goals on Sunday in the Sun newspaper and Nuts magazine about the failings I perceived in the rules and running of European football did not make him a huge fan. I love the idea that he thinks Michel Platini sat in WH Smith flicking through all the little things in there, like, and goes, have you seen this? Michel Platini's got better things in his life to do than read Nuts magazine, yeah. Chris.
Oh, definitely.
I do wonder where he knows him from, though.
He probably typed in McAvini underscore Kamara.
You're the guy from McAvini underscore Kamara.avi.
Or my mate fucked popcorn.
Guys, on that note, did this book change you? I want to hear a rating out of 10, please. So previous winners of the series have been Jason McAteer, Grant Holt. They all got something like 8.5. So pretty high standards. Jack, what did you think of the book?
I think it's a lot of fun. I don't think it's a particularly good book, if that makes sense. Like, there are structurally, it is all over the place, as we've discussed. This idea that, you know, the first like half is about being a pundit on Sky Sports News and all the ridiculousness that he gets up to. And the second half of the book feels like a weird addendum to that. I don't think it quite knows who its audience is. And it tries to deal with quite a lot of serious issues and then will undermine them constantly. I think, I don't know, it doesn't quite fit right to me, if that makes sense.
I thought this book was like a classic stocking filler. That's what I assumed it would be from the outset. I thought it was a tie-in soccer Saturday. And that's what I quite like. That first 100 pages, it's exactly what I thought it would be. Just like his greatest gaffes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
but then it really changes and it surprises you. So maybe it's just his way of, maybe he thought he'd never get an autobiography otherwise. So that's his way of getting us into it. And I actually.
Or he thinks that if it's given as a stocking filler, no one's going to make it that far.
Yeah, I genuinely think it might be that, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
The thing is that there is a more interesting way to do, like Chris Kamara's had a really weird career. And he's had a very interesting career in many ways, but by partitioning it up like that, like it doesn't really work. They feel like two fundamentally different.
I feel like the publisher has gone, you need to hook them in early, so put all the jokes about tits and soccer AM at the beginning, and then we'll put all the serious stuff at the end. I think they flipped it.
That marriage of those two people never really like works. It never really like comes together in a satisfying way.
Do you think that would have happened had Chris Kamara read the book himself? Do you think that might have happened? Because we still haven't really gone to the bottom of that. Who did?
He might not know that it's that way around.
He might have started being this, like, you know, it's a really like a story about rags to riches, like came up through the world, and then it turns out it's just 50 pages of him, you know, a transcript of his time at Fratton Park, like talking about 7-4 against Reading versus Portsmouth. Matt.
James, did the book change you? Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I really liked how it began, because that's how I know Cammy. And you know, it's sort of dad jokes. Some of them are funny. Some of them are just, you know, it's his personality though. So it's like, I quite liked that. But then it just sort of became, like a lot of the other books we've read, just a list of fixtures and transfers, which was a little bit more disappointing.
I didn't think it was.
I felt it got towards that. Just sort of the middle section was just a bit. It was a slog. Also, this is the first time we've read a book from someone who's from Teesside, and that's where I'm from. So I was like, oh, this will be interesting. I'm going to hear about all the places that I know. And he didn't really. I mean, granted, he did say that his childhood was miserable, and that's why. But I mean, at least mention the transporter bridge. Like, give me something. But yeah, no, I did enjoy it though. I did enjoy it. It
sounds like you're trying to talk yourself out of it all the way through that. I generally really did enjoy it. I thought it was a really good fun book to start the series. I'm looking forward to reading more. And that's why I'm going to give it an 8, I think. James, what are you giving it out of 10?
I'm going to go 7.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Jack?
6.
Okay.
See, I was going to go 6.
Nah, it's too mean.
You always tell me off for being negative. All right, I'm sticking by 7.
Okay, Tash?
I'm going to give him a 9.
Wow! Oh, there we go.
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good book.
I agree. Wait, does that give him 36? That can't be right, can it? No, 30. It gives him 30. 7.5 overall. That's pretty good. I think Cammy should be pretty happy with that. But, you know, well, not that he cares. So for the quiz, guys, this week, you're all named after people on Chris Kamara's cast list at the top of the book. Jack, you're Harry Redknapp, top bloke. Tash, you have to say that in full, by the way. Tash, you're Neil Warnock, loose cannon. And James, you're Stephen Bywater, potty mouth.
I knew it.
Yeah, as soon as I knew this is what the thing was, I was like, yep, that's what it'll be.
Yep, sticking to the tried and trusted.
I also like what he called referees, where he just went, no all. Just like, They're just bloody know-alls.
Mascots, just, worse than scum.
They're these weird experts who seem to know the rules. Bizarre.
Question number one. What was Cammy's job before he was discovered by Portsmouth? Shout out your name and the answer.
Potty mouth. Harry
Redknapp was in the first. What's the answer, Harry Redknapp?
He was in the Bloomin' Navy.
Is correct. Point one to Bernhardt. Question number two.
To Harry Redknapp, top bloke.
Sorry, to Harry Redknapp, top bloke. Question number two. Cammy sang on a charity album called A League of Their Own with a band of footballers. Please name any of the three players and the instrument they played. Shout your name, you know what?
God, I literally listened to this morning.
We gave a clue earlier.
Harry Redknapp, top bloke.
Harry Redknapp's in there first.
Why, it's Dion Dublin saxophone.
Dion Dublin saxophone is one. Anyone else
mentioned it.
Someone played the drums and I can't remember who it was.
No, that's true. It was a drummer. Any idea? It's a drummer and a pianist.
I know someone else who was on the album. Can I get half a point for that?
Who was it?
Gabby Roslin.
No, she was on it. You're not getting half a point.
Nah, I do remember that, but no.
I'll give Tash half a point for that. No, the other two people were Frank Sinclair on the drums and Matt Jansen on the piano.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, who God, knew? I remember thinking it was Matt Jansen. Oh, it's very strange.
Question number three. So Cammy goes to visit LA at some point in the book. Answer me this. Who does Vinnie Jones live next to in Hollywood?
Stephen Bywater, Whitemouth.
Yep, who is it?
Quentin Tarantino.
Is correct. God, yeah, he lives next door to Quentin Tarantino.
And they don't even mention him on the tour. They go, this is Vinnie Jones' house. Anyway, next house. Just
moving along.
So odd.
This big foot-shaped house. Question number four. Apart from jazz, name any other reasons Cammy was sacked by Bradford. There's three of them.
Harry Redknapp, top bloke.
Yep.
He didn't celebrate the playoff victory enough.
Yep.
And he didn't. There was a player. Oh, do you want me to? Should I stop?
Yep. Shout your name again.
Harry Redknapp, top bloke.
Yep. Again.
There was a player that Geoffrey Richmond wanted to sign, or that said that they were going to sign.
I'll give you that. John Hendry from Barnsley didn't sign him. That's it. Finally, the other one. Anyone got any idea? I think the last one's basically costs and results. So that's not a good one, the last one. And finally, who did, and a little cameism to end it on. That's another cam-on-to. That's a hard word to say. Who does Chris Kamara describe as a man with a heart as big as a plate?
Harry Redknapp, top bloke.
Yep. You're smashing
Carlos
this.
Carlos Tevez.
Is correct. Jack is the run. Harry Redknapp, top bloke, is the runaway winner with 17 points or something. Right, that was it, guys. Thanks for joining me. It's been great fun having you all back on the show. We got a load more books. We're going to read this series. So next week, we're going to be reading Mesut Ozil's Gunning for Greatness. Then after that, we're going to read Neil Redfern's There's Only One Neil Redfern with a special celebrity guest. Please, guys, if you read any of the books or you're going to be reading them with us, get in touch. In fact, get in touch with us about anything to do with the episodes. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at Footy Book Club. Instagram, we're Football Book Club, and we're on Facebook as well. Please do get in touch. Can't wait to see you next week. Any last words for this week, guys?
Yeah, what are we on the YouTube website?
Just type in football_bookclub.avi and you'll probably find us somewhere. Cheers, guys. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Daniels, and James Balgian. It was created by James Bug and it was produced by Crowd Network. Thanks to Chris Kamara for writing the book. But I know what you're wondering, where are they all now? Well, Chris Kamara remains a national treasure, and when he's not on Soccer Saturday, he can be found sat in his rocking chair or writing jazz tracks about Phil Thompson. Jeff Stelling is still the Smurf in chief of Soccer Saturday, however he's since left Countdown, much to the disappointment of grannies nationwide. Gunnosaurus was fired as press secretary at Harrods, Michel Platini was absolutely devastated when Nuts went out of business, and 10 years later, Bring on the Wall is still the nation's favourite catchphrase. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is used in the Creative Commons 4.0 licence. We'll be back next week with Mesut Ozil's Gunning for Greatness. Until then, bye-bye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.